Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This is Hidden Killers Year in Review, a look back at the biggest stories of 2025. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
All right, let's set the scene here. It's March of 2025. Court filings are coming out left and right in the lead up to the trial of Brian Koberger, the man accused of brutally murdering four University of Idaho students in the early hours of November 13th of 2022. Trial is already shaping up to be one of the most closely watched in recent memory. There's national attention, endless commentary, a death penalty on the table, and then tucked into a routine court motion, something unusual emerges. Something that makes even the most seasoned courtroom watchers do a double take. Prosecutors quietly filed a motion stating that members of Brian Koberger's own family may be called to testify during the trial. That's right. His dad, maybe one of his sisters, potential witnesses in a quadruple homicide case. The kind of detail that instantly reframes the courtroom dynamics. And suddenly, this isn't just a murder trial. It's a family drama playing out under fluorescent lights, in front of a jury, cameras, and the entire country. The reason behind this bombshell, why it came out, it wasn't even because the prosecution was trying to make a big splash. It was part of a logistical fight over something as simple as seating. Koberger's defense team had requested that his family be given reserved seats in the courtroom. Seems fair enough, right? Families of the accused often want to be there, want to show support, to be visible as a show of humanity. But the state objected. They weren't doing it to be cruel or petty. They were simply following the rules. If someone on the witness list, if you are on the witness list, you can't sit in court before you testify. It's called sequestration. It's not optional. It's there to make sure that witnesses aren't influenced, consciously or not, by hearing other testimony before giving their own. You can't unhear something. You know, it is what it is. So when the prosecution pointed this out, it essentially confirmed what had been quietly a possibility until that point. Members of Brian Koberger's own family are considered material witnesses by the state, and that makes them, at least for now, potentially part of the case against him. Let's unpack what that really means, because it's one of the things to say to, it's one thing to say to someone that they might be testifying. It's another to realize that this could be a father or a sister called to the stand in a capital murder trial where their own son or brother sits at the defense table. This isn't Law and Order. There's no dramatic music swell, no ad break to collect yourself. It's just human beings under oath trying to reconcile love, grief, fear, and truth, all under the most excruciating pressure imaginable. So why would the state want to hear from them? What do they know that could possibly be relevant to a murder case that happened 2,500 miles away from their Pennsylvania home? Well, let's start with Brian's father, Michael Koberger. He's not just Brian's dad. He was also the passenger in Brian's car during a very important drive, mind you. In mid-December of 2022, just weeks after the murders, Brian and his father drove from Pullman, Washington, where Brian was a grad student, all the way back to Pennsylvania for the holidays. That's a cross-country road trip over 2,500 miles, and it happened while law enforcement was quietly closing in on the suspect. At that point, the public didn't know much, but investigators did. They had surveillance footage, they had an idea about the suspect's car, and they were watching. They drive from Washington to Pennsylvania under a microscope, covert surveillance, electronic tracking, the whole deal. And who better to speak about what happened during those long, snowy days on the road than the man sitting in the passenger seat? And there's no indication that Michael Koberger had any clue what was going on during that trip. And he hasn't spoken publicly about it since. But the state isn't necessarily interested in his theories or emotions. They're likely interested in what he saw, what Brian did, what route they took, whether anything odd happened. Did Brian take any detours? Was he quiet, agitated? Did he stop anywhere unexpected? Did he dispose of anything? And it's not just what happened during the drive that matters. It's what happens after they arrived in Pennsylvania. Investigators later said Brian was seen wearing gloves, cleaning his car, even dumping trash in a neighbor's bin. Did his father see that? Did he help him clean the car? Was there any conversation about what was going on? Again, this isn't about guilt by association at all. Michael Koberger has not been accused of anything. But in the cold world of trial prep, it's a big deal. He's a potential source of firsthand information, and that makes him valuable. Then there's the sister, one of Brian's two older sisters, both of whom were living in Pennsylvania at the time. Reports first surfaced through NBC's Dateline suggest that one of them had concerns about Brian when he came home that December. She noticed a few things, allegedly, that made her uneasy. Brian was wearing latex gloves around the house. Oh, that's just Brian. Consistently. Not for chores, just always, allegedly. And he drove a white Hyundai Elantra, the exact make and model police had been linking to the crime scene. He was living just a few miles from the murders while attending school himself. To her, that just wasn't a coincidence, allegedly. She reportedly voiced her concerns out loud. She allegedly even urged the family to check Brian's car, and they did. Now, nothing suspicious was reportedly found during that impromptu search, but that doesn't mean it didn't happen. And if it did, if one of Brian's sisters can recount what she observed, what she felt, what she said, what others in the family said, that could become powerful courtroom testimony. It's important to emphasize that there's no indication that this sister is eager to testify. In fact, it's likely the opposite. Who wants to be on the stand in this kind of a trial? But in a murder case, the law doesn't really care about your comfort level. If you have relevant information and you are not protected by a legal privilege, you can be called to testify. And it's exactly what the state seems to be signaling here. Now, some people might ask, can they refuse? Isn't there something like parental privilege or sibling privilege? No, there is not. In a criminal case, especially one involving a violent felony like murder, Family members can be compelled to testify if the court determines that their testimony is material. There are some exceptions, spousal privilege being the most common, but even that has its limits, especially when the spouse is a witness or a participant in certain conduct. So unless Brian's family and his family members are planning to invoke the Fifth Amendment, which would imply self-incrimination, and again, there's no evidence that they've done anything wrong, they're likely to have to take the stand if they're subpoenaed. And when they do, they won't be offering opinions or speculating. They'll be expected to stay with the facts. What they saw, what they heard, what they did. Nothing more, nothing less. From a human perspective, this is a brutal proposition to be in. You're dealing with the emotional wreckage of having a loved one accused of something unspeakable. You're trying to grieve the lives that were lost because you're still human and still horrified. And at the same time, you're trying to make sense of the person you thought you knew. Then the legal system calls. And you're asked to do the unthinkable. Get up in the court and say things that might help put your own child, your own sibling, to death or life behind bars. And let's be clear, Brian Koberger is facing the death penalty. Prosecutors in Idaho announced their intent to pursue capital punishment months ago. So for his family, this isn't just a legal proceeding, it's a possible life or death moment. And the idea that, in their own words, spoken under oath, might be used to help convict him, that's something no parent or sibling ever imagines they'll face. It's also worth noting that this kind of thing is incredibly rare. Not unheard of, but rare. Most criminal cases never reach this level of intensity, and in most cases, the defendant's family doesn't have information that's directly relevant to the crime. But here, because of that cross-country trip, because of that time spent together, because of those early warning signs during the holidays, Brian's family is more than just emotionally involved. They're potentially fact witnesses, and that's a distinction that changes everything. So what happens next? That depends on whether the prosecution follows through and actually calls them to the stand. The final witness list is due in April. Until then, we won't know for sure, but based on the court filings and the state's objections to their court presence, it's a strong indication that at least one family member is being seriously considered as a witness. And if that happens, the courtroom will have to adjust. The judge will need to enforce sequestration rules. That means Brian's parents and his sisters won't be allowed to sit in the gallery and watch the trial, at least not until they've testified. That's standard procedure. But for a family trying to support a son through the most harrowing experience of his life, it's another blow. Another barrier, another reminder that the system, for all its rules and fairness, can still feel incredibly cold. It's not about punishing the family. It's about protecting the integrity of the process. Still, the emotional toll is undeniable. And so we're left with this strange and sobering picture, a family that says they love their son, that says they're shocked and saddened by what happened, that has already lost jobs, privacy, and peace of mind, and who may now be asked to help the state prove its case against him. Not by choice, not with malice, just because they might know things no one else does. And if you're Brian Koberger sitting at that defense table watching the door open and seeing your own father or your sister walk towards the witness stand, what does that feel like? We'll never know. But it's one more layer to a case that's already full of tragedy, one more moment where the lines between justice, family, and heartbreak blur in ways no one can quite explain. Now let's take a step into another area of this case. Take a step back, not to the courtroom, but to the days just after the arrest, the public statements, the emotional fallout, and how Brian's family handled the sudden transformation from anonymous suburban parents to the most talked about people in the country. It was New Year's weekend, the country first heard from Brian Koberger's family just days after he was arrested for the murders of four University of Idaho students. The Kobergers released a statement through his public defender. It wasn't long or emotional, but it said a lot, maybe more in what it didn't say than what it actually did. The message began with something simple, an expression of sorrow for the victims' families. "There are no words that can adequately express the sadness we feel," it read. And then in the same breath came the pivot. The family asked the public to honor Brian's presumption of innocence. They said they loved him, they would support him, and they would cooperate fully with law enforcement. It was a careful statement. One, they tried to strike a balance between grief for the victims and loyalty to their son. And when you read it slowly, you can almost feel the tightrope they were walking. Because on one side, you have an unimaginable horror, a crime that stunned a college town and captured national attention. And on the other, you have your child in handcuffs, accused of carrying it out. That balance between public sympathy and private loyalty has defined the Kobergers' family role in this story ever since. From the very beginning, they didn't run. They didn't disappear. Just a few days after the arrest, they showed up in court, not in Idaho, where Brian would eventually face charges, but in Pennsylvania, where he'd been arrested and where the brief legal process called extradition would determine if he'd be handed over to Idaho authorities. It was January 3rd of 23, a cold, gray day in Monroe County. Brian Koberger was brought into the courtroom wearing red jail-issued clothing, escorted by officers. His family was seated quietly just behind the rail. His mother, his father, his two older sisters, they sat still, watched everything, and said nothing. There were no outbursts, no drama, just the quiet weight of a family trying to hold it together in the middle of a media circus. At the time, Brian was being represented in Pennsylvania by a public defender named Jason Labar. He spoke with the press after the hearing, and what he said gave a little more insight into what was happening behind the scenes. According to Labar, the Koberger family was in shock. They didn't believe Brian was capable of the crimes he was accused of. They believed in his innocence. They were, in Labar's words, trying to navigate a very complex situation while keeping their support for Brian, but also acknowledged the pain of the victims' families. Labar emphasized that the family had been cooperative with law enforcement. They answered questions. They didn't try to interfere. And they made it clear that they wanted to see the legal process play out. For the Kobergers, there was no version of events where they stood in the way of an investigation. But there was also no version where they abandoned their son. That kind of duality is hard to explain, comprehend, if you haven't lived through something like this. But for the Koberger family, it became their reality. They were thrust into the national spotlight not because of something they did, but because of who their son was. Overnight, they went from a quiet, mostly private family in rural Pennsylvania to being scrutinized by the press, analyzed on cable news, and discussed in Facebook comments by strangers around the world. And they weren't prepared for any of it. How could they be? How could anyone be? Both of Brian's sisters had careers. One was a therapist. The other had worked in education and had even been dabbling in acting, allegedly. They were professional women living relatively quiet lives. After the arrest, that all changed. According to reputable reporting, both sisters lost their jobs, not because they were accused of anything, but because of their last name. Their employers, it seemed, didn't want the attention. The association with the case was enough to make them unemployable. No one said it out loud, but it wasn't hard to read between the lines. Being related to Brian Koberger came with a price now. That loss of employment, it hit the family hard. Brian's parents were both retired. His sisters had been part of the household's financial backbone, allegedly. Without their income, the family found itself in an increasingly precarious position. News Nation's Brian Anton later reported that the family was in what he described as very, very bad shape financially. They weren't funding a high-powered legal team. They weren't flying across the country for court dates. They were at home, trying to survive a storm they never saw coming. And yet, through all of that, they couldn't publicly waver in their support for Brian. Privately, though, things seemed a little more complicated. The Bar later shared that Brian's mother, Marianne, was emotionally devastated. She couldn't believe the accusations against her son. At the same time, she couldn't stop thinking about the victims. According to LeBar, she prayed for them daily. She couldn't imagine the pain their families were going through. That wasn't for show. That wasn't a press release. That was something she reportedly said in confidence. And it speaks to just how emotionally torn this family really was. Because when something like this happens, when someone you love is accused of doing something unspeakable, it doesn't just shake your trust in them, it shakes your trust in reality. You start rethinking everything, every conversation, every moment. You wonder if there were signs, if you missed something. At the same time, you cling to what you know. You remember birthdays. Remember those school photos. Remember quiet afternoons. And family dinners. You remember the kid you raised, not the face on the news. But those memories don't erase what's unfolding in real time. They don't change the headlines. They don't bring back the four young lives that were lost in Moscow, Idaho. For the Kohbergers, that tension has been ever present in their silence. It's in their absence from Idaho courtrooms. And it's in the way they've tried unsuccessfully to stay out of the spotlight. They haven't done interviews. They haven't spoken out. Their only public comments have come through legal representatives. After that initial statement in January of 23, they've kept their distance, and not just from the media, but from the trial itself. As far as we know, they haven't visited Brian in jail in Idaho. That's not necessarily because they don't want to. According to reports, it's a condition or a combination of factors, distance, finances, and of course, the complications that come with possibly being called as witnesses. That doesn't mean they've cut ties with Brian. News Nation reported that the family stays in regular contact with him through phone calls. The exact nature of those conversations isn't public, and it probably never will be. But the fact that they're still in touch says something. It says that in spite of everything, they haven't let go. That maybe the hardest part of all. Imagine being a parent or a sibling in that position. You're horrified by what happened in Idaho. You grieve for the victims, even though you've never met them. At the same time, you talk to your son, your brother, now accused of those very crimes. You listen to his voice on the phone. You hear him say he's innocent. Maybe. And maybe you believe him. Maybe you want to believe him. Or maybe you don't know what to believe anymore. That's not a place most of us can imagine. But that's where the Kohberger family has been living since the morning of December 30th, 2022. And as the trial draws closer, that pressure only builds. The world wants answers. The media wants footage. The courtroom wants witnesses. But the Kohbergers, they're just a family caught in the eye of a storm they never asked to be a part of. And that's the truth, at least as we know it. There's no public unraveling, no press conferences, no books or interviews, just a family trying to survive the fallout of something they did not see coming. But behind the silence, there's something else. A moment from before the arrest, before the cameras, before the statement, a moment when one of them noticed something that didn't sit right. A moment when questions were asked privately, quietly, with some growing dread. And that moment, that's where we're up to next. Let's go back to December of 2022. It's winter in Pennsylvania, just before the holiday. Snow's on the ground. Christmas lights are up. The usual quiet of a rural neighborhood. Brian Koberger has just driven across the country from Washington State University, where he's finishing his first semester as a PhD student in criminology. He's made the drive with his dad, Michael. Just the two of them, thousands of miles together, rolling through America on the heels of something unspoken. He's coming home for winter break. And as far as his family knows, that's all it is, just a visit. But something about this visit starts to feel off, especially to one person in the house, allegedly. Reports later surfaced, first brought forward in NBC's Dateline special, that one of Brian's sisters began to feel uneasy not long after Brian returned home. And she wasn't just vaguely uncomfortable. She had very specific reasons for being on edge. Let's start with the facts as they were known at that time. By December, the murders of the four University of Idaho students had already been national news for weeks. The crime scene had been discovered on November 13th. A whole month had passed, and no suspect had been publicly named, but certain details had been released by investigators. Most notably, police had put out a request for information on a white Hyundai Elantra, a car spotted near the scene in the early morning hours when the killings took place. They believe the driver or owner of that vehicle might have crucial information, even if they weren't directly involved in the crime. The make, model, and color were all over the news. It was one of the few concrete leads the public knew about at that time. Now, back in Pennsylvania, at home, Brian pulls into the driveway in his white Hyundai Elantra. Same make, same color. Not just that. He'd been living just a few miles from the murder scene in Pullman, Washington, across the state line, but essentially a neighbor to the victims. It's not far. That's when, according to reports, one of the sisters started pulling the pieces together. This wasn't just her brother coming home for the holidays. This was someone who matched key details with the police description, the car, the location, the timeline. And then there was his behavior. Big factor in a lot of this. Brian reportedly began wearing latex gloves around the house. Not while cleaning, not while cooking. Constantly. As in all the time, allegedly. That kind of behavior stood out. It wasn't casual. It wasn't explained. And in the middle of a high-profile unsolved murder case where DNA evidence was a major focus, it kind of raised some serious questions in one's mind. His sister reportedly brought this up directly and forcefully. She allegedly voiced her concern to other members of the family. She pointed out that Brian's car was the same as the one police were looking for. She mentioned how strange it was that he hadn't taken off the gloves. And according to NBC's Dateline, she said it out loud. What if he was involved? Think about that for a second. That's not a suspicion you bring up lightly. It's not the kind of thing you whisper over coffee. You think Brian did it? Nah. It's a life-altering question, one that carries the risk of tearing your family apart, but she said it, allegedly. Her concern didn't fall on deaf ears. The family reportedly took action, took a look at his car, just a casual glance in the backseat, but a deliberate effort to look for anything unusual, anything that might confirm or ease their fear, allegedly. They found nothing. No blood, no weapons, no obvious signs of wrongdoing. And to be clear, they weren't trained investigators. They were a family, probably acting out of panic, trying to make sense of a terrifying possibility. But there's another layer here. According to investigators, Brian had already taken significant steps to clean his car. Not a routine car wash either. Not going to the Jetstream car wash and getting it all cleaned up. We're talking bleach, gloves, careful disposal of garbage. Law enforcement had said that by the time they executed a search warrant after his arrest, the car had been thoroughly scrubbed down. So the fact that his family didn't find anything, that doesn't necessarily mean there was nothing to find. It may mean it had already been removed. But let's stick to what's verified. The sister raised concerns. The family searched the car, and at least one person in that household was genuinely afraid that Brian might have been involved in something horrific. Not everyone shared that view. According to the same reports, Brian's father defended him. He didn't believe it. He reportedly told the rest of the family that Brian couldn't possibly be involved, that it wasn't in his nature, that this was all some massive misunderstanding or coincidence, allegedly. That moment, right there, it's a snapshot of a family in crisis. One child believes her brother might be connected to a quadruple homicide. The father insists it's impossible. Everyone is under one roof, trying to celebrate the holidays, while the tension silently builds like a storm no one wants to name. And remember, this is still before the arrest. Brian hasn't been charged. He hasn't even been named as a suspect publicly. But inside that home, the sense of dread is already creeping in. It's not clear how long that tension lasted. It's not known if Brian sensed it. He hasn't spoken publicly about it, and neither has his family. In fact, the entire episode remained completely private until it was revealed months later by the media. There was no mention of it in the family's public statement, no reference to it in court filings. It simply surfaced through investigative reporting after the fact. And when it did, it added a whole new layer to the story. Because now the narrative wasn't just about a family reacting to an arrest. It was about a family that might have seen warning signs before the rest of the world knew a thing. It was one of the most human parts of the case. That moment when fear and doubt crash into loyalty and love. When someone you've known your whole life starts to behave in ways you can't explain. When the news reports start sounding a little too familiar. When coincidence doesn't feel like coincidence anymore. And yet, in the end, they didn't go to the police. They didn't sound the alarm. They kept it within the family. Maybe because they weren't sure. Maybe because they didn't want to believe it. Or maybe because by the time they searched the car and talked through it, they convinced themselves it couldn't be true. Again, all we know for sure is that this happened, and that it wasn't made public until months later. That's important, because the silence wasn't performative. It wasn't strategic. It was just silence, a confused family. Let's be very clear. Nothing in this account suggests the family had any role in the crime. There's no evidence they covered anything up. There's no allegation that they helped him evade arrest or destroy evidence at all. What we're simply talking about here is a deeply uncomfortable domestic moment. A sister sees something, she says something, the family reacts, that's it. But legally, that moment now matters. It may be part of why the state plans to call family members as witnesses. Because that sister's observations, they're direct, they're personal. They come from inside the house. And in a courtroom, those kinds of facts, they carry weight. If she is called to testify, she won't be asked how she feels. She won't be asked. She'll be asked what she saw, what she said, what her brother did. She'll be asked to walk through a moment that most families would never speak of again. And for the Koberger family, that's one more fracture in an already shattered foundation. There's no handbook for this kind of thing. There's no guide for what to do when you think someone you love might be involved in something unthinkable. The decisions you make in that moment don't come with clarity. They come with fear, guilt, denial, and the desperate hope that you're wrong. For one sister, that moment came in December of 2022, long before the mugshot, long before the indictment, long before the headlines. In that quiet Pennsylvania house just days before Christmas, the doubt started to take root. What do you guys think? Let us know in the comments. I have a ton of empathy and sympathy for this family. They did not ask for this to take place. But I do wonder how much they kind of deep down had a suspicion I don't want to say they knew, because I do not believe that they knew that this was him. But let's be honest. We know the characters of the people that are close to us. And sometimes in a family dynamic, you know characters that you otherwise wouldn't be spending any time with if they weren't your family. And sometimes those characters are odd, strange, maybe even possibly dangerous, possibly even criminal. But you don't know what you don't know. And in many cases, it's just that. It's they're the odd duck. It is what it is. Rarely does it come this far. And I hope that family somehow finds a way to move on from something that they did not deserve to have to be a part of. Again, tell me your thoughts in the comments. I would love to hear them. And be sure to press subscribe wherever you are downloading podcasts so you don't miss any of our reports. And on YouTube, hit that bell, hit subscribe. Let your friends know we exist. Share this video. It helps us grow and reach more. And thank you for that support. I am Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.
Want to stay on top of the latest true crime cases? Press subscribe now and never miss a breaking update from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
There's that trip to Clarkston as well. Some are interpreting that as maybe disposing of evidence. There's surveillance footage at an Albertsons and Costco just hours after the murders. Again, looks a little odd, something that we haven't heard of before. I went to Costco that morning. I was living my normal life.
Yeah, those things, certainly prosecution is going to argue, hey, that gives him the opportunity to cover his tracks, to try and dispose of inculpatory evidence and materials that could link him to this crime. Now, on the other hand, defense might say, hey, that is not sufficiently incriminating. That's something that just everybody could do. You can go to Albertsons in the morning. That's not a crime. And so I'll be interested to see really the potency of those specific details and whether defense can sort of neutralize those by saying, hey, anyone's allowed to go to Costco, man, if that's all right.
Sure. And obviously it is. I want to bring up a graphic here that I put together while I was on vacation, because on vacation, what do? I sit there and I look at true crime things. This is a very interesting correlation, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on it. Maybe you've seen it on my Twitter or something the other day. Okay, it's up behind me. I'm going to blow that up a little bit. The look. We got the picture here of Koberger. This is the morning after the murders, wearing that really tight white shirt, which always felt weird to begin with. It's like, why are you like, well, he's, I don't know, maybe this is how he wears his shirts. It's weird. And then you also have the movie American Psycho right next to him. and you'll look at the dress of the character in American Psycho. And I don't have this, but you also have the movie Psycho, where the murder takes place in the shower, where he's taking that picture. Both have the word psycho in the title. This is a man who has talked about feeling very different, very outside, very not part of the norm. I'm sure, in my conjecture, probably been called psycho before by some people, like he's crazy or whatever, just people in conjecture saying those sort of things. And to me, this looks like a nod. This looks like a really weird nod to the fact of if he did, or the allegation that he committed these crimes and thinks he's getting away with it. Like, I'm smarter than all of you, sitting there with the thumbs up. There's been a lot of weird correlations here where it's like, wow, I think he's, again, thinking he's smarter than the room and assuming he's never going to get caught, but he's going to put something like this out there of a F you to the world. I don't know. I found it really creepy. Psycho, American Psycho, there's a lot of weird correlations, I think, that tie back to that picture. I think there's more of a reason for the shower picture than meets the eye.
There could be. There is a subset there's kind of a subculture that has romanticized American Psycho. You have this sort of handsome, smart person who also gets away with these gruesome murders, mm-hmm. and everything's and everything is all right for him. And I just can't help but wonder whether there are some resemblances there. You know, Koberger was smart. He was a PhD student. He's not a terrible looking young man, whatever. And so, you know, do some folks aspire towards that romanticization, that glamorization of egregious murder that happens in some of our media, including in American Psycho? I think it's a fair question.
Well, and there's also, it's never been completely proven, I wonder if it will in court, the Papa Rogers account that was out on social media immediately after the murders, before Koberger was arrested. There was someone out there with that, if you remember this case way back, like almost 3 years ago now, the profile of the character looked a lot like Brian Koberger, and it was labeled Papa Rogers. And this person seemed to have knowledge of the crime scene that no one else did, talking about the knife sheath early on, almost challenging people who were trying to figure out the case. And immediately after his arrest, the guy who was posting under those accounts completely disappeared. Again, we don't know if it was him, but person did seem to know a lot about knife sheaths and things like that, that no one else knew of at the time. So that to me, if it was him, shows a propensity for trying to play with the public, try to play with people psychologically. That's where this comes in. And I'm like, I think there was some joy here. I think there was, I'm smarter than the rest of the room. Y'all treat me like crap, but at the end of the day, I'm going to show you, I'm going to get away with this, and I'm going to be right in front of your eyes and no one's going to even know it. Surprise, Brian, people figured out the riddle. But in his mind, allegedly, I'm wondering. I'm really wondering if these are things that can play in. I don't know how would anything like this play out in court, showing consciousness of guilt? I guess you'd have to really somehow find some reference to him, you know, admitting that he's doing it for those reasons. But it certainly is not a good look.
It is a chilling prospect if that, in fact, was what was happening. In fact, I remember when I was a prosecutor, I had a stalker/arson case where the individual assumed this digital identity and was, referencing song lyrics and weird cryptic facts about what happened. And ultimately, we tied him to those communications via IP addresses and a really extensive digital footprint and investigation. I'm sure the government has looked into that. But if it comes to be that that Koberger was doing that, that is damning, especially for the death penalty phase, because it shows not only that he committed this quadruple stabbing, but also that he had some kind of gleeful, perverse gratification from like messing with the public about it.
Like, could something like this show up in the death penalty phase if he's found guilty? Where, I mean, the photo I'm sure will, if in fact he's found guilty. But could the prosecution make an argument that, look, yes, this is a creepy ass photo, but look what it also looks like? Could they make the correlation arguments in there? Could they admit basically American Psycho footage or pictures like this or Psycho things to make reference to go, look how sadistic this is?
I think they might want to. I think a court would be taking a real risk if it allowed in that next level of what you said, the sort of American Psycho footage, that kind of thing. Because even if there is a connection, even if it is relevant, it's possibly unduly prejudicial under what's called Rule of Evidence 403, meaning that it is so likely to inflame the passions of the jury that it's just too unfair and we can't let it in because the jury might base their decision in part on that inflammatory evidence. I think that would be a concern at the penalty phase.
There's a dog piece of fur that was found. We still don't know if it was from one of the victim's dogs. How long does it take to identify dog DNA and compare it to the, I would think by now we would have an answer to that, or maybe it is, and maybe it's just still sealed up. We've known about the dog hair for a while, but as of now, we still don't know the answer to if it matches the dog. That piece of dog fur, that tiny little dog fur, that one, I think, could be the nail in the casket if, in fact, it is from one of the victim's dogs.
How in the world would an innocent person have that kind of contact with the dog if they weren't the individual in there who committed these crimes. I just can't foresee even a theoretical innocent explanation under those circumstances, absent some sort of planting of evidence argument.
Sure. And I don't know how you even go down that road. It gets to be a little too insane. Snarkles may save the day. I don't know what the dog's name was, but at the end of the day, Snarkles may save the day in this case. And, really show that jury beyond all the other things, without a doubt, what a lot of us are thinking. Of course, innocent until proven guilty. We'll see what continues to come out.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Truth is, Ohio, when it comes to broccoli salad, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. You know it, your neighbors know it, heck, everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows it. That tangy zip of Miracle Whip is the reason why Ohio's broccoli salad runs circles around everybody else's and never gets winded. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip right where it belongs in all your favorite recipes. Buy Miracle Whip at your local grocery store and get your tang on, Ohio.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.